Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Dr. Psych Mom Show. Today, I'm going to be talking about what's your flexibility quotient. And this is not a thing. It's just a way that I found in discussions in my secret group, which I actually mentioned in my most recent subscriber episode, How Healthy Couples Age Well Together. I mentioned there was this discussion and I had posted, what's your flexibility quotient, which was something that I had made up on the spot because, as you know, something that I associate and I've seen in practice is predictive of a successful relationship is how flexible and open-minded the partners are. And so I thought about a way to conceptualize this, and since I am no longer in academia, it will end here, but at least for now. But, you know, I thought about what components, you know, operationally, concretely, really would go into something like a flexibility quotient, right? Which is not quotient in the mathematical sense, you know, but just the characteristic. So there's multiple definitions of quotient. Somebody in the group thought it was just kind of a mathematical, you know, the answer. And I guess a division problem, right? Isn't that right? Don't remember. But but it also means, you know, just basically a trade, or do you have this thing, or how much of something do you have? So anyway, first of all, like, why do I think that open-mindedness is so predictive of a successful relationship? Well, honestly, what do you have to do in order to be happily married? You have to empathize with each other. You have to take each other's perspective. Like, that's not an option not to do that. And you can't just be happily married, but like you don't really kind of give a shit what the other person thinks about or how they think, and you never put yourself in their shoes. That's just like not possible. That's as silly, honestly, as when women say, I could be a loving wife, except I just never have to touch him ever. That's just one part of love. And so I could be a loving wife. I just, you know, never, ever touch him. First, they start saying, of course you could be a loving wife without sex. Which, of course, I disagree with, but, like, you know, at least there's kind of a popular media, you know, leg to stand on with that one, because, you know, sex is supposed to be so, like, gross in our culture. But then I'm like, okay, cool, right? Like, all right, but so like, let's shelve that, but how much are you touching? Oh, well, you know, I'm not a touchy person. So you're not a sex person and you're not a touch person. So, I mean, you cannot, it's like I always say, like, can you be a parent to a baby or a toddler without touching them? A good parent? No, of course not. The only person who could be a good wife without touching somebody is somebody whose husband doesn't live with her, you know, if he's like deployed or if he's in prison. But the minute that his ass comes back, if you're not touching him, then you're not a good partner. Unless, of course, the both of you are asexual or both of you don't like touch. I'm talking about the traditional situation where the person, the man at least, wants touch, right? Anyway, moving forward. So the flexibility quotient. So the first thing that I thought about with this is, how much do you really do stuff that you don't want to do? So sometimes, you know, people think, because, you know, you could refer back to my podcast, The Cult of Boundaries and Preferences. Sometimes people think you're never supposed to do really anything you don't want to do, especially not in a love relationship. And that could not be further from the truth, obviously. Can you imagine if you did that as a parent? If you, like, didn't do anything you didn't want to do? Like, do you want to cook them dinner? No, certainly not. Not all the time, at least, you know. I mean, I cook every night. Do I want to do that? Do I have a great yearning to do that? Sometimes it's great. Overall, I'm proud of myself for doing it. It's a value. But do I, like, literally, like, want to all the time? No. No. You know, why? Like, did you want to do bath time every night? Bath time with two small children in a tub is, like, really, like, annoying, you know, and you get wet and you got to bend down. And I had, like, calluses on my knees from that, because I was doing it for so many years straight with three kids under under 3.5, and then basically until I had 3 kids under, I don't know, some other larger number. They were bathing together. It's like a whole thing. You want to do that? No. Do you have to do it? Yes. You know? So it's the same kind of thing. So when people don't do things they don't want to do, then they're a pretty shitty partner, because definitionally, you're not going to always want to do the same things at the same time. So if some reason that means to you that you're going against your core sense of self and you can never eat a different cuisine, or you can never watch a different show, or you can never have sex when you're not in the mood, or like anything, then how good of a partner are you really going to be? So in my flexibility quotient, I said, rate yourself 1 to 10 along all of these domains. And this one was the first one. How often do you do things that you don't want to do? Now, the reality is that this is not meant to, to be in the dysfunctional realm. This is like more of a trait. So like, certainly if you're incredibly codependent and you never have any idea what you want to do in the first place, which renders the question invalid, or like you constantly, you know, like only do things that you don't want to do, then yes, of course you could say that that would be dysfunctional too. But this isn't for that. It isn't for a codependent sort of situation. This is for like, how much do you get outside your comfort zone and do stuff that you don't want to do, with 10 being like, yeah, that's like an easy thing for me to do, and something that, you know, I even pride myself on, which many people do pride themselves on, being able to roll with stuff. And there's a specific version of rolling with stuff that it's going to that I'm going to address later, that actually somebody in the group recommended that I add to the flexibility quotient, and then I did. So what is next? So the next one is, when do you, how do you act about talking about things that you don't want to talk about, or new ideas? So how do you do when, like, for example, somebody brings something up that, you know, is outside your comfort zone? How do you do when your husband talks about sex if you don't necessarily like to talk about sex? How do you do when your wife talks about emotions if you don't necessarily like to talk about emotions? How good are you with being open-minded to the discussion of new ideas? Because this is a key component, and I'm sure that that's kind of self-explanatory, but I will explain it anyway in case it's not. You have to be able to talk about stuff you don't want to talk about within an intimate relationship for it to be successful, because you're not always going to want to talk about what's important to your partner. So a new idea would be something like, you know, I think that we should start going to church for a couple, let's say, that doesn't go to church, right? So are you somebody that's just going to be like, what are you talking about? That's not who we are. I don't want to discuss that. That's ridiculous. You know, many people do honestly respond like that to the idea of something new. And those are the people who end up locked in marital conflict. People who cannot discuss new ideas, because as I constantly say, part of being in a happy marriage is understanding that people change and grow and evolve constantly. And so let's say in this hypothetical example I just made up, the woman decided that she wants to return to going to church like she did when she was young, and it's important to her because she wants to, or she realizes the kids aren't being raised religious and she feels that's a problem. Well, if he just literally won't even talk about it, then they're definitely going to be in marital conflict. Am I saying he has to agree? No, but he's got to talk about it, because somebody that doesn't agree, as long as they're not a dick about it and you can have a discussion, you can usually come to some kind of a compromise. Or at the very least, you can have an open discussion where you both respect each other's perspectives, and then maybe one decides to do it, one decides not to do it. Things can go a range of different ways, right? But the most open-minded person would say, oh, that's interesting. Why do you want to do that? That's surprising. You know, we don't do that. So what have you been thinking about? Much the same, honestly, as a friend would. Because if you said to a friend, I'm thinking about starting to go back to church with my kids, they wouldn't be like, what the fuck's wrong with you? That's a stupid idea, right? I mean, like, a friend would never say that. Yet, a partner would be more likely to say that, because they feel somehow that their identity being yoked to their partner, that their identity is under siege, and that they have to immediately, batten down the hatches because some change is coming that could potentially change them. And if they are a more closed-minded person, then they will not even be able to tolerate this new idea. All right, so that would be another one that you would rate 1 to 10 in your flexibility quotient. It's going to have 4 parts, right, as you saw in the description. The next one is the ability to say you're wrong. So this is huge in couples counseling. So many people come in and they say, my partner can't say they're wrong. You usually when we talk about it, neither one of them can say they're wrong. One of them has been saying, all right, I'm sorry. Is that what you want? Is that what you want to hear? You happy? You happy? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know what I did, but I'm sorry. Right? And the other person refuses to say it at all. So obviously it's a race to the bottom. Or the other person says something like, well, maybe I would say I was sorry if you weren't such an asshole, right? So, you know, it's a bad, bad scene altogether. So ability to say you're wrong. Some people could do it at work, but not at home. Or some people could do it with the kids, but not with the spouse. People who are very good at this are very good with people, because there's nothing that other people like more than, you know, somebody who's humble. Quite honestly, you know, and if you're not humble and you can't admit that you're wrong, this is like the number one thing. I work with a lot of CEOs. They're like great at this. They love it. They love to be wrong because it's like an opportunity to show that they can say they're wrong, which is something they have been trained to do and coached to do. And they know is like a hallmark of making people love you is admitting when you're wrong. So these guys are very easy to work with, honestly, a lot of the time in session, because they're just waiting to be coached and to say, I didn't think of it like that, you know? And these are the ones who don't have to be told to say good point. Sometimes they have to be told to say good point to their wife, but they definitely know to say it in session and at work. And I have the whole thing about two words that could make your, you know, life better is if you say good point, you know, to your wife in conflict. But anyway, so this is the whole thing is, can you say that you're wrong? If so, your spouse is going to love you a lot more. I'll tell you that. All right. And the last one that was suggested by a group member, a loyal group member that I'm giving a shout out to right now. Thank you, group member. You know who you are. Who's a very smart person, and said, what about this one of the ability to be flexible when plans change? Right. And so then I added that in, because that is very, very important as you go through life with somebody. Things aren't always going to go the way that you want them to go. And so how are you with spontaneous changes to plan? So some people could be good at all the other three, but then they are very bad with a plan changing midstream. And usually this is related to anxiety and a home where a change, as these are all, I'll get to this in a sec, but these are all related to how you were brought up, obviously, because that's how you learn how to interact. But either way, some people could be really good at saying they're wrong and really good at talking about new ideas, you know, and really good at being, you know, doing stuff they don't want to do. But once they have the plan, they are set. And if somebody fucks with the plan, even unintentionally, they get really, really anxious. You could see some moms are like this when the kids get sick. They don't blame the kid for being sick, but they are like massively anxious because the whole schedule has to change. Or like even there's a lot of women who like shoot themselves in the foot with this, and men can be super rigid too. But I'm talking about women right now because I see this specific example frequently. Is the woman wants the guy to plan a date and she wants him to be more romantic. He tries to plan a date and she says, no, we can't, because don't you know, remember, like, you know, I said that we should go grocery shopping at that time, or I said that the kids have to do this at that time, or, you know, we have this on the calendar. And he's like, man, though, we have everything on the calendar for the next 5 weeks. How could I possibly find a free night? And she's like, well, you could have got there earlier before there was something on the calendar. Well, I mean, if the calendar is planned assiduously 4 weeks out at all times, then no, it's not really reasonable to expect somebody to plan a date, you know, 7 weeks prior, unless we're talking about a birthday or something, you know? So in those regards, the person self-sabotages because they want a romantic partner who takes charge, but their anxiety makes them over-plan, right? And of course, plan, you know, it's like everything else. It's got to be moderate. Do I think that two people, specifically parents, should never plan? Obviously, that would be a chaotic, horrible environment. And many people plan compulsively in reaction to having parents who underplanned, you know, like adult children of alcoholics. Like the mother had nothing on the calendar. There was no calendar. She was laying around drinking. And so now they have their kids' schedules planned to within an inch of their lives at all times. And that's a trauma response, right? So in this regard, can you roll with the plans changing? Can you just say, okay, cool? And sometimes, honestly, if you just talk to people about how they wish their kid would respond one day to plans that have to change and what are they modeling, then they could really use that as a motivator for growth in this area. Because, like, let's say your car breaks down. Do you want your kid to literally feel like they want to die and have an immediate panic attack? Or would you want them to say, okay, we couldn't have predicted this. I guess we won't do X. I guess we'll just call AAA. You know? All right. Okay. That's what we're going to do. That's fine. Everybody wants the kid who rolls with it. Everybody knows that kid will be a more successful, happy adult. But if you want to make that kid, you can't be the person who bursts into tears and who starts, you know, ruminating and hyperventilating about the thing that you're going to miss. You know, and so some people honestly can do the crisis a lot better than they could just do change of plans. So some people could do the car breaking down because they kind of know that that's like a seminal moment and the kids are watching how you're going to act. But if a kid wants to bring like a friend to something where you weren't planning to bring a friend, or the husband has to like, you know, do work at a time you didn't think he was going to do work or something, that freaks you out more. And then the kid is watching you there too. So all of these things, as I promised I would conclude, all of these things are related to how you were raised in your family growing up. So if you had a very close-minded family in any of these regards, well, by the way, just to sum up there, you would rate yourself 1 to 10 in all of those four dimensions and or domains, and then you would get your score. And as I said in the group, if you're close to a 40, then you're awesome. And if you're close to a 0, then your spouse is a saint, which is, of course, just a joke. But, you know, you got to kind of – it's a helpful way to conceive of whether or not you are somebody who is flexible and open-minded. And now back to the family of origin. If you saw parents who were hysterical anytime something changed, who couldn't get outside their own head, who only thought about things one certain way and everybody else was wrong and stupid, you know, who like could never do anything that they didn't want to do and fought endlessly locked in a power struggle with the other spouse over what they were going to do at any given moment or the larger, you know, direction that the family was going to go in at any time, then it's going to be really hard for you to be flexible, and therapy can help. This is like a major thing that therapy can help with, is challenging some of these cognitive distortions that you have about how difficult, intolerable, upsetting, unfair, etc. it is to, have to go outside your own comfort zone and have to do things that you don't want to do or entertain ideas you don't want to entertain or roll with things that you wish didn't happen, didn't change. Therapy can be super, super useful in this regard. And of course, you know, the better you are at all of these things, the better your relationships are going to go, not just with your spouse, but with your kids and with your friends and at work. And the truth of the matter is that nobody was ever too open-minded. Because open-minded doesn't mean like you can't figure out a path to take. That's like a common misconception, is if you're open-minded, then you're just so open-minded your brain falls out. That's like a saying, right? But that's not true. You should and can be able to think from within anybody's perspective. It's so funny. Like, people will watch like murder documentaries and like really be able to identify and empathize with this, like, let's say abused kid. They're always abused kids that grow up into a murderer. They'll really be able to empathize with this person. And then their husband will be like, you know, I have to work an extra hour on Saturday. And they'll be like, I just cannot understand you. I just cannot understand a person with your priorities. I'm like, man, you just understood like a murderer. You know, you can't understand that this man's anxious, wants to work another hour. Like, Jesus Christ. So the point being that everybody should, there is no downside to being able to talk about any idea, to think about anybody's perspective, and to be able to roll with unavoidable changes, right? There are no downsides to any of those, right? And of course, saying that you're wrong goes without saying that that is, you know, a very big positive. And it's actually a large thing that adult children become estranged from their parents over, is they remember that the parent could never say they were wrong and could never, ever deal with an idea that was different than their own. So even if you're just doing it for your kids, even if you want to think about this, then that would be a protective factor against later conflict. All right. Hope you guys found this little thing interesting. And my next episode is going to be about working men. Younger working men are getting the same shit that stay-at-home moms used to get, which I think is a pretty interesting one. That's still going to be free. And then the one after that will be paid. So please do subscribe. And I'll talk to everybody soon. Have a great day, guys.